Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
This week, we'll play excerpts from a recent press conference with Steph Warren, the Veterans Affairs Department's Chief Information Officer. In today's show, Warren addresses a variety of issues ranging from cybersecurity to claims processing for veterans to the technology improvements around medical appointment scheduling for veterans. Warren starts off the show by discussing the CIO office's goals and priorities for the next year.
One of the things that we've done to help the team focus on what we need to accomplish, we've been going after the three major priorities in the VA in terms of ending homelessness, ending the backlog, and access. But we've made sure that when we think, and my team, in terms of those great employees on the line, to help them visualize what they need to do, we break ourselves into five priorities in terms of how we deliver IT. The first one is, how do we make sure we are good stewards of the veterans' data? How do we make sure the things we do, the way we approach the job, we are remembering that that data is key and that we're putting the appropriate protections in place as we deliver those benefits and services. We also make sure that we're doing a quality customer service. So it's more than, yeah, you get what you get. We do a lot of measurement within VA of the frontline employees, of all employees, how is IT doing? And we're actually moving from an annual survey to a continuous survey in the spring of next year. So we'll be sampling the workforce and asking, how are we doing? What can we do better? What can we do different? And we use that information to tune how we do service delivery, how we do support in the different facilities. What can we do different? There are many things that we standardize on, but we need to try and figure out how do we standardize and how do we do that configuration management while still remembering that the individuals who are delivering those benefits and services count on us to give them the tools that they need to do the job. IT products or softwares are mixed systems. It's a place where there's been a tremendous amount of focus here at the VA in terms of how we do that. In 2009, we did a traumatic break with how you delivered work. Fundamentally, we said, if you can't deliver something in 6 months or less, we're not going to start it. And it transformed how we delivered stuff. From an organization that was 30% of our products were delivering in terms of spent money and you got something, where today 80% is our target of things that deliver on the committed date. So in other words, if I say 6 months or less from now, I will deliver a solution, up until this year, 80% of the time, we have delivered on that date. And 96% of all of our projects deliver. So within 30 days, another 20% of the ones that missed delivered, within 90 days, such that within 180 days, within 6 months of a missed date, that approximately 20% of our projects, they actually deliver capability and functionality that's needed. So we have a 4% loss rate, which is just unusual for the industry in terms of how we do that and how we focused on it. It's an area I'm passionate about because our team puts an awful lot of passion into making sure that when we make a commitment to do something, we do it from a product delivery standpoint. The other area is operational metrics. Again, we do products in terms of software, but we also have to run those systems. We have to run those tools. So a lot of monitoring and measuring about how our systems are doing, when they're up, when they're down, a lot of sophisticated tools with respect to incident management. So I know when things are down, I know why they're down. Very aggressive lessons learned. It's not that, yep, it failed, life goes on. It's something broke. Why did it break? What do we need to change? Is it a process failure? Is it a person failure? Is it a technology failure? Is it an organizational failure? A lot of focus on how do we close that loop and learn from what happens. A breakdown is not a reason to hide something. A breakdown is what happened, why did it happen, what can we do such that we don't have that type of breakdown again. The other area is managing financial resources. One of the reasons IT consolidation happened at the VA was back in 2005, 2006, Congress was very, very unhappy with the VA's ability to articulate where the funds were going. So the VA is the only organization, only department where all of the IT dollars are in a single account, and they're managed that way, and they're reported that way. So a lot of energy and a lot of time and a lot of focus has gone into making sure we know where it's going, what we're getting for it, and what the return on it is. The budget's was $3.9 billion in 2014. 2015 we're still working through, but it'll probably be that amount or a little bit more. And I just hit a couple of the key things we've delivered on. I'm going to talk about VBMS and some of the things that we've delivered as part of that. Vista Evolution, there was a commitment to deliver capability 1 October. I'm going to hit that in one of the later sections. Working on mobile applications, telehealth in terms of enabling that capability. So a lot of things we're delivering on an ongoing basis.
The thought process that you're hitting 80% of your delivery dates is pretty impressive considering nobody else in the civilized world seems to be hitting that when it comes to IT projects. And there's some question over whether that's a consistent, meaning are you setting it and then we're hitting it or not hitting it, or are you kind of shifting as necessary? How much wiggle room do you give the projects? Because I know from previous experiences that if something's moved, you usually say it's moved. And if something's not moved, you say it's not moved. So I'm just trying to understand, because that's a high number, which is impressive.
Once we set the baseline, and we have this a defined gate process, we have a milestone zero, which is there's a budget passed, but the project team actually doesn't get any money until there's a PM and there's a business owner and there's a business requirement, and that's to go into the design phase. Normally what happens is a budget passed, the team gets money, and off they go. I'm not sure what they're doing. But we basically do not release dollars until you have a customer, you have a PM, and you got requirements. And then they go into design. But before they execute on design, we do a milestone one, which is the design consistent with the architecture? Does it meet the cyber standards? Does it meet a whole list of things? At that point, we make a date commitment, because we do chunks of work that are 6 months or less. And in fact, we're averaging right now 4.2 months for our increments. So at the point we release dollars to actually build something, we lock in the date. Now, that's where the 80% number comes from. So 80% of those commitments, that's the target in terms of making it. If the date slips, we don't change the date. That's what we hold folks to. And I'll give you an example this year. We're reporting that this year we made 73%. We had a set of increments where we had made commitments for delivery before the government shutdown. When the government shutdown happened, I had to stop those projects. If I basically said, hey, you know, government shutdown, outside my control, change the dates, my delivery metric for this year would be 82%. I would have made it because I rolled the dates. But we don't roll the dates. We hold to those dates. And one of the things, and it's a bit of an exaggeration, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if the PM dies. It doesn't matter why you missed the date, the fact that we made a commitment. And a couple of things that we've learned as we've done this is, one of the key things we have found is, and this was some of the early experimentation, is the moment you allow the date to float, you have a lower probability of ever delivering again. Because once you come up with, well, yeah, it's okay to go. Yeah, yeah, it's okay to change it. Yeah, yeah, it's fine. There is no discipline. There is no thing that says you must deliver, you have to deliver. And we've also found the greatest predictor of whether a project team will deliver is whether they've delivered projects on schedule before. And in fact, there's a great chart that I have in my office, and I should have brought it. And it was from a group called the Standish Group. And they went out and they measured not VA projects, not government projects, not US projects, but projects across the world. It was out of a population set of about 13,000. And they just plotted probability of delivery versus time. And at 6 months, you have a 55% chance of delivering your project. Because time is the biggest enemy. The customer changes, the requirement changes, the owner changes. Something changes which causes you not to be able to make it. And so we've said the date's solid. It's got to be 6 months or less. And we hold to that. But we also make sure that we have the project managers declare before the date if they're going to miss it. I mean, one of the games that folks would play is, oh, I'm so sorry, I missed my date. But you didn't know. And the term that we've used in the trade was immaculate deception. You didn't know until the instant you missed it. No, it doesn't work that way. And so we have tech stats. And the tech stat is not why you failed, it's why aren't we going to miss the date and what can we do to fix it? And we have a meeting every week called a red flag meeting where every single PM and project team and contractor and customer can be on that call, and it's, I can't make a date, or I need help to do something. Because our goal is meet the contract. And the contract is we've committed to deliver something on a date. We will do what we need to do to get there. So a lot around it, but it's, date is sacred to us, and we hold it no matter why.
We have to take a break. You're listening to excerpts from a press conference by Steph Warren, the Veterans Affairs Department's Chief Information Officer. I'm Jason Miller. Coming up next, Warren discusses what VA is doing to improve its cybersecurity. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. You're listening to excerpts from a recent press conference by Steph Warren, the Veterans Affairs Department's CIO. In this part of the show, Warren discusses his efforts to improve the security of veterans' data.
We have a very structured, layered defense in depth in terms of how do we protect ourselves from the inside out. We start at the data layer and we go all the way out. We go out to our perimeter where we actually count on Homeland Security to cover our back, to watch our back. So we're very engaged on the whole Einstein programs. We were the first department to turn on Einstein 3, which is the new level of protection where they're actually doing deep packet inspection, where they're looking at what's crossing over those boundaries. Again, by them looking not just on our boundaries, but all the other boundaries, we're able to take advantage of what they see across the threat sphere in terms of what's coming at us so we can respond quicker. We have a lot of protections that sit on our website. We've got protections on the desktop. We've got protections on the servers. I think you can name a space in the VA and there is some tool or there is some monitoring system that is sitting there watching at what's happening and why it's happening and responding to things. And so we've focused on that as a tool or a technology approach. The other thing where we're the second department to pick it up, State Department moved out first, which was this concept of continuous monitoring. For folks who've covered the cyberspace, what used to happen is every year and maybe every 3 years, you would sit down and you'd open up all the paper documents that said, hey, this is my system and these are my boundaries and these are my controls. Has something changed? And then you did an update. We do that continuously now. So we have all of those systems. In fact, August of last year, we turned on continuous monitoring, and we are constantly updating what's our threat boundary. When we do scans across the complex and we're doing continuous scans, the scan results get loaded into the accreditation boundary or how we control those applications or all those systems. So we can make sure remediation of things found in near real time is being dealt with. So we've moved away from this paper point in time process to where we're doing continuous monitoring, continuous control. We actually, last year in November, beginning of November, we raised our threat condition because we were walking into the holiday season. And so what we did was we actually started closing down where folks went. So we only go to reputable websites. Again, we're trying to make sure that when folks do their business, when they're out there, living life, if you will, that we're constraining where the potential risk or threat is. There's a lot of things that we've implemented based upon what Homeland has identified for us or us looking across the industry to make sure that when our folks are out there, they are, if you will, surfing safe, they are doing their work safe. And in fact, I started a series of articles, emails out to my team in November as well, where I talked about identity theft. And I talked about what they needed to do to protect themselves. And the translation I was making for them is, behavior you do at home, behavior you do at work, it's got to be the same. You can't have two different types of behavior when you get onto your computer because it's not going to work. So it's like, how do you protect yourself from identity theft? And we've actually expanded that. We kicked off a program called More Than a Number. And it's an area where we recognize that veterans, because of their service, and I remember it from when I served, my Social Security number was published all over the place in the orders, my travel orders, my home address, my Social Security number, my date of birth, maiden names. Those were all things that were published, and they were out there. And so we've seen that that type of information is available. So what we've started to do is we've basically aggregated all of the different resources that are available to citizens. And if you go dig, you can find them. And we pull them together into one site. And we also have a 1-800 number that we make available to veterans if they feel something has happened to them, such that they can reach out to us and we can help them get control of their lives. Because one of the points that I've made to the team is, you can't get good care, you can't take advantage of a benefit if you're dealing with identity theft. So we've got to figure out, how do we get them into a safe space? How do we make sure they can take control of their lives? And it's actually an ask, if you will. We have a standard where the potential of exposure of veterans' information we offer credit monitoring. Now, what does that mean? Our biggest exposure of veteran identity is people taking data out of a system and printing it out and losing control of it. So let's run the scenario. Somebody prints out a list of names with the appropriate identifying information, and they leave it in a bathroom, in a medical center. And they walk out of the bathroom, and they've left it there for 3 hours before somebody finds it. If we don't have a camera on the hallway outside the bathroom door such that we know nobody else went into that public restroom in that three-hour period, we offer credit monitoring to those veterans. That's the standard we follow, where there is the potential for it. And the ask is, the uptake of veterans taking advantage of that credit monitoring is not as high as it needs to be. And so we've reached out to the VSOs because we want to make sure veterans have that quality of life. We want to make sure when you get that offer of credit monitoring, take it. It's something that you need to do. Somewhere within the VA, somebody made a mistake they should not have made. So the reason we're offering that credit monitoring is to make sure in those situations that you're able to keep an eye out and make sure things are taken care of, which is why we want the extra distance, put the website up, put the 1-800 number up in terms of people calling, aggregating all the information together, because we want to make sure something that we've done or something that they've experienced. My contention is, given the last 18 months, I'm sure everybody in this room has gotten at least one letter offering them credit monitoring, given all of the major breaches and data issues that have happened. And we're trying to make sure veterans see us a resource that will help them. Let me stop there and see if there are questions in this information protection area.
Let me ask about cyber in the general sense of, you guys have gotten into a lot of challenges from Capitol Hill, House Veterans Affairs Committee specifically, but others as well, questioning how well you guys are doing. Obviously, the data you're showing with the bubble chart shows, no matter how bad they think we are, there's a whole lot of people that are worse, and obviously you can do better. But there's data, and there's hearings, and there's what feels like, at least, an overwhelming set of evidence that says VA is not doing very well. VA is struggling with cybersecurity. Look back on reports from your IG. You can look at reports from the financial system's internal control that show problems. And I know those are 2013. We don't know what the status of 14 is yet. But it doesn't seem like that VA is doing enough. And Capitol Hill definitely feels like VA is not doing enough. How do you respond to those criticisms that says you're just that whatever you're doing is still not enough?
And I would agree that we have to keep doing more, and that's what we do. Right? So again, we don't rest on our laurels. The threat environment keeps increasing. The sophistication of the threat keeps growing. So we don't rest on our laurels. We don't sit back and say, hey, that's enough. We are constantly moving and evolving with the threat that's out there. And it's something that everybody is experiencing. You know that. You've experienced it. As a large institution, we're always under threat. But I think one of the things that's very important to recognize is there is the how are you complying against a paper standard, and how are you doing protecting information? And these things are measures, right? They're indicators of how an organization is doing, right? We are always driving on making sure that the FISMA FISCAM audit, which is the annual financial audit, that we continue to work on the things that they identify. Right? They're focused on our financial system secure, and then they've bound in some of these other areas. We're always looking at changing those. We're always looking at improving those. We're always looking at adding to them and continuing to move the profile. But I think it's really important to recognize that compliance to a standard is very, very important. But at the end of the day, we need to deliver services and benefits to veterans. And I can give you the most secure IT system in the world.
Unplug it.
I'll unplug it from the wall, right? So there's no power, and I'll bury it in a lead box, right? But some of the things you're hearing, it doesn't matter if it's not hooked up to the internet. You can pick it up. And so we do this risk balance in terms of what is necessary to deliver those benefits. And not just deliver those benefits. My security team, my developer team, my operations team, our data's there too. It's not this hypothetical thing, right? It's something we worry about because our information is in there. Our parents' information is in there. Our siblings' information is in there. Because it's that important to us. We just don't go, yeah, it's fine, it's a paper thing. We drive even on the standards. We drive on the outcomes. We measure the outcomes. And I can assure you that none of my folks are satisfied with what we've done. We keep doing more. We keep adding on it. We keep pushing. And we also ask for those third-party validators. What do you see, right? I don't think there's ever been an issue with folks stepping up and saying, hey, a particular department has had a significant breach. I believe we've heard them in the last 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, year, 2 years. I don't believe you've heard those authorities stand up and say the VA has had a breach.
Well, last summer, not the summer we just ended, but the summer before that, you had IG and your former CISO stand up and say you had nation states in your system. Now, was there a breach of data? I know that's what you said at the hearing, that maybe there was not a breach of data, but you also said you don't know if there was a breach of data if exfiltration occurred. That was at least my remembrance and understanding. Now, of course, that's a year ago, so I accept that. That's a long time ago.
So a couple of points, if I could.
Yeah.
A year ago, dealing with issues that took place a couple of years prior, one. Two, it's really, really important to think in terms of what's the threat space, right? I can guarantee you that every one of your computers, your personal computers, have had a virus on it at some point, right? You've got those tools that come through, pick it up, and pull it out. And so when you talk about what happens is, there is this progression of threats that hit a desktop or a laptop or your mobile device, and where does it go to, and how does it then get to the data? The compromise doesn't happen until the data actually leaves the organization or the enterprise. And so we were upfront in terms of, yes, there were things that came into the enterprise, but the ability to say, yes, veterans' data got exfiltrated from the organization. All of the team said, no, that did not happen. And what you run into this community is nobody is going to make a definitive statement because there's always some potential, right, of what happened or what didn't happen. And again, my team assures me every day there hasn't been an exfiltration. Data has not been pulled out. Data is not being pulled out, even as we're dealing with a virus that hit a desktop or a virus that hit a laptop that we've tracked, we've quarantined, and then we've removed. And again, it's a matter of degree, right? We live in a hostile world. We live in a threat world. Our focus is making sure the data doesn't leave because it's my data, right? It's my dad's data. It's my brother's data. It's his widow's data. It's all of those things. And we take that very seriously in terms of making sure we are giving it the appropriate protections.
We have to take a break. You're listening to excerpts from a recent press conference from Steph Warren, the Veterans Affairs Department's Chief Information Officer. I'm Jason Miller. Coming up next, Warren discusses VA's approach to the new medical appointment scheduling system. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. You're listening to excerpts from a press conference by Steph Warren, the Veterans Affairs Department's Chief Information Officer. In this part of the show, Warren discusses VA's plans around buying a new medical appointment scheduling system.
We laid out a couple of really key points because we wanted to make sure we energized the marketplace. The first thing we said was we're not going to use an existing contract or an existing vehicle. Usually when you do contracting with the federal government, you're running off of a schedule or you're running off of an established contract and you've constrained who can compete for the business. We went out and said, we're doing full and open. Adds a little bit more time, but we wanted to make sure we were able to pick up some of the innovation that has happened in the marketplace in dealing with and helping to solve long-term how we schedule things. The other thing that we communicated very clearly is we were going to do a two-step. It was not a paper acquisition. Just a paper acquisition. We're going to do a first check. How did you do against what we asked you to deliver? But the second piece was we want you to actually demo your proposed solution. And you weren't going to demo it to folks sitting at headquarters. The folks who were going to do the evaluation were schedulers, people who do scheduling for their job on a day-to-day basis. Because we want to make sure that the interface, the experience, the way the flow worked was conducive to them doing their job the best way they can. The third thing we put out there was it's going to be a commercial product, right? Something that already exists. We were not going to buy a multi-year development program. We were looking for something already out in the marketplace, whether it was a software product or a service, so we could bring it in and use it. And then the final piece was there would be connectors required because scheduling is complex. We pulled data from 71 different systems in the VA when you try to schedule something, and then when you schedule an appointment, you send data to 31 other systems to manage it. And so those connectors, which is the work that folks would need to do, we're going to ask that those connectors, those services get placed in the open source community so others could use them in the future if needed. So we put that out there, we messaged it to folks because we wanted to make sure the marketplace was engaged. We have gone out, we've had an industry day, we've had multiple industry days. Today we are working off 300 questions that have come in from over 13 teams that said they're interested in bidding against the package. We expect there to be more, but those are the ones who came forward. Now, that's the long-term piece, and we're looking at awarding that contract in the second quarter of FY15, which is the first quarter of the calendar year, so in the January-February timeframe. And we are going to be delivering capability 6 months or less sequence and have full core capability out within 2 years. So in the short term, what are we doing? As soon as this flared up for us, we went out and we asked, what can we fix today? And the teams that went on the ground as they were doing the reviews at each of the sites, as they were doing the surveys and the interviews and the investigation, they identified 11 things that we could fix in terms of patches. We call them patches because it's going in, changing the existing code, dealing with data issues, dealing with definitional issues. 6 of those have been deployed and are in use. 5 of those are in field testing or quality control, and we expect them all to be completed by the end of the calendar year. So those fix this, change this, adjust that's taken care of. The second piece, because the interface, how the schedulers interacted with the data was such a burden to them, we awarded a contract in August, which was taking those existing individual panels and turn it into a calendar view, what you would expect to see today. And so that calendar view on contract, we're expecting the initial delivery to be in the January timeframe, and then we'll go to our first site to test to make sure it's met the particular needs of what needs to happen. Once that gets resolved, any defects, we roll it through, I'd say the first 6 months, sometime in the April timeframe, we'll be dropping that change out into the field to make all those things happen. So fixed patches in terms of things identified from a data or there was a flaw in terms of things happened, 6 of 11 done, 5 by the end of the year. Change the interface in terms of how folks interact with the tool. Contract awarded in August. Development underway. We expect to see deployment at the first site in the January timeframe. And after we do testing to make sure it's working the way it needs to, make any changes, we'll start rolling that across. And we're looking at the April timeframe to start getting the full aspect out, including the training that goes with it.
The final new calendar system, not the one that's being updated, but the new one that's being RFPs out now, is going to have to pull data from 71 systems, send data to 31 other systems. The connectors will run the open source community. One of the biggest problems that when it comes to IT systems that I've seen over the years is that middleware piece, database to database, and that's where usually the failures happen. How are you guarding against those failures? Because you're talking about 100 systems here, and one breaks, and not the whole thing could collapse on itself, but you get the point.
What basically validated for us that we could do this was the America Competes Act, that competition we did, because it was the same capability and the same functionality. And what it allowed us to do was define what were the data elements, what were the data standards, where were they coming from, where did they need to go, what quality checks needed to happen as the transactions took place. One of the places, and you hit it pretty clearly, is the integration between multiple systems. And normally what happens when you get into that world, you're like, oops, didn't realize that one. Oh my gosh. We have the benefit of the fact that we did a full competition. We actually demoed it, we ran it in sandboxes, we connected up with systems, and we validated whether it did or didn't work. And we learned places where we had it wrong in the American Competes Act. And so those are all the corrections that we've made to make sure that we know where those connections are and we can manage those connections in the services world.
Why not then take what was already done in one of those three from the challenge and just use that? I mean, in many ways, what I assume to hear is it wasn't good enough or just didn't meet all your needs, but you have something that works. That's at least an 80% solution. And many times when you talk IT, good enough is better than perfect.
The America Competes was actually set up as a, can you prove the concept, can you demonstrate the concept, can you validate what needed to happen? It was never structured to be the transition into full up deployment in a production system. Because remember, what we've got to be able to do, it's not just scheduling for an appointment, it's scheduling a surgery. So this is one of those places where you need to make sure you have it right, because having a patient show up and be anesthetized and be sitting on the table and the equipment doesn't show up because you hadn't done it right would be a non-starter for us. And when I say for us, it's we're not meeting what our intent and what our need and what our mission is. So it's really making sure that when the connection happens, that we're doing it right, and that it's, I won't say it's perfect, but all the pieces are there that are necessary for the clinical engagement to go well.
Why, if you have three that work, why go through this whole process again? Why not just go back to those three, justify it from a sole source, you know, say these are the three that are going to bid, and that's it, and save yourself a ton of time. I know there's competition issues. I know there's cost issues. I know that there's...
It's also a development project.
Meaning... Because it's a bigger piece.
It's a development project, right? Again, the ability to lay out what are the requirements of what needs to be done as a commercially available product, not for somebody to have to build on and do more for. It would be getting us back into somebody's going to have to go build something for us. And we believe, on the America Competes, they were not fully, again, multifunction, multi-site, multi-capability. The America Competes did not hit all of the capability. And so what you're asking is, hey, just take those and let them go through. Those folks have an ability to build off of what they already did, right? So we've not said, no, you can't. What we've done is we're basically doing what you're saying, but we've opened the pool back up again because technology and capability has grown. I mean, a lot of the work with high tech and some of the other things have driven innovation and technology in the marketplace such that there are a multitude of vendors who can do that today. And you know what? If those folks come in, the prior candidates or the prior winners from the America Competes, and they're able to meet the standard and deliver and deploy, I'm excited. If it's somebody else, I'm excited. But what's key is the product we get is the product that is going to do the job for us.
BBMS over the years have gotten a lot of criticism as well. I think a lot of it probably goes back to frustration over change, and so it's probably a bigger change management piece. But the downtime, I think, frustrated people. What were you able to do differently to make this last quarter, you had no unscheduled downtime? What happened that where previously you had more unscheduled downtime?
A lot of work was focusing with the team in terms of in our operations side. How do we do monitoring? How do we do preventive maintenance? So one of the things that has happened as we deployed the system out has been, how do we make sure that we have awareness of what's happening in the environment? The thing that's interesting for agile type projects is you build the infrastructure to map with the capability or the desirability of the system you're delivering. So a lot of things happen in the past where you built this really, really robust infrastructure and then the program gets canceled because you never delivered any functionality. And so what we were doing is we were bringing infrastructure online as capability was needed and as dependency was needed. And so what you were seeing was the natural progression of a system that was not all of the work that was taking place in the benefits area. But as we started picking up the load, we started adding more rigor and more robustness to what needed to happen. We also added a lot of discipline into our organization. So it was not just how we matched up infrastructure with capability, but we also rung through the organization about how you need to have monitoring. How do you actually need to have preventive loading and preventive interventions? We still have problems with servers in the background. But because we see the cascade before it actually has a user impact, we've changed the server out, we've rebooted the server, we've changed out the server, we've added in new capability such that the individuals using the systems never experience it. And that was building the discipline into the team. And there's a concept called DevOps that's out there where you get rid of the boundary between the development team and the operations team such that it's not a throw something over the fence for somebody else to deal with. The developers are now just as concerned with what the operational stability of a system is, as the operators are interested in the reliability or the robustness of the product coming in. And so getting the team to understand that and really gel across that boundary has continued to drive our availability up such that this last quarter we were doing really, really good.
We have to take a break. You're listening to excerpts from a recent press conference by Steph Warren, the Veterans Affairs Department's CIO. I'm Jason Miller. Coming up next, Warren takes a series of questions from reporters, starting with his office's relationship with Capitol Hill. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. You're listening to excerpts from a recent press conference by Steph Warren, the Veterans Affairs Department's CIO. In this part of the show, Warren discusses how his office has worked with The Hill on IT and cyber issues.
I want to go back to cyber for a second and ask a little bit more about your relationship with The Hill. At one time, I know you guys were meeting, your office was meeting with the folks on Capitol Hill quite often, maybe monthly, maybe more often, maybe quarterly, to give them updates. And you were doing these cybersecurity reports, so I'm sure you're still doing. But the relationship, the way I understand it, is they feel like, and this is what I've been told, that there's either a communications breakdown or a communications block that's happening, where they're asking you one set of questions and you're answering a different set of questions, and either one side's not listening or the other side's not hearing. How are you working to overcome that? Because until you can get past cyber, some of these other programs are still going to get even more criticism than maybe they deserve, because there's a feeling that you're not doing enough around cyber. So the question is more about what, not what you're doing with cyber, but how's your office dealing with the communication side of ensuring that people in Capitol know that you are doing all you can?
This roundtable is part of some of the things that Bob has tasked us with in terms of more transparency, more outreach. You're correct. We publish a monthly report. In fact, the law requires us every quarter to have a data breach report. We actually publish it every monthly, and it's out on the website. And we're trying to figure out, how do you more clearly show what's happening and why it's happening? So a lot of focus on how do we communicate. Bob has taken the point, if you will, in terms of working those relationships with the Congress, in terms of how do we communicate better, what are the needs that need to be met. We have conversations. We've gone and had briefings. We try to be, and I believe we are, responsive to things being asked of us. And I think it just is going to take more work on our part in terms of being responsive when the questions are asked, trying to understand what is being asked so that we can meet what their needs are. I don't think any of us are like, no, Congress doesn't have a role. I've sworn to uphold the Constitution many, many times, and trust me, I firmly believe in the roles of the different parts of the federal government, and I'm very supportive of their role. I'm very supportive of my role in terms of best as I can as a career employee. So we'll keep working on it, because you're right, it's something we need to work through. I expect that we'll continue to engage with them, working with the colleagues in congressional affairs in terms of how do we do that. I know Bob is actively engaged with the chairman of all the committees in terms of what can we do better and how can we be more responsive. I don't have a silver bullet if you're looking for one.
No, I'm not necessarily looking for a silver bullet, but if there's a communication breakdown and they don't believe you're doing a good job in cyber and you believe you're doing a good job in cyber, something's got to give. And if they're going to continue to have hearings, you're going to have to continue to explain what VA is doing to improve cybersecurity. And you're not satisfying them. So therefore, you're still going to get this back and forth. And what I heard you say was, the secretary is handling the communication with Congress, but your office is or isn't. Are you having quarterly meetings with the Capitol Hill folks? Are you going up there monthly? You mean your office, not maybe Steph Warren?
No, we've gone up. In fact, I met with the House and Senate staff to go through scheduling. Right, so this was representatives from all, I don't think it was eight corners, I think it was four corners, which is on the authorizing side. We have ongoing meetings with the appropriators in terms of VISTA Evolution and where we are with that, on the budget, where we are on the budget. So we have ongoing conversations. So it's not a no, don't want to talk to you. We are engaged, very responsive to technical requests in terms of, hey, talk us through what the bits and pieces are. So yes, no, it's not Bob's job to take care of. We all have that responsibility. If I implied that, I apologize.
I just want to make sure it would be clear, because it just kind of...
We're all engaged on making sure there's transparency. I mean, that's what this is about. This is the first time we've done one of these in terms of making sure we're communicating. And what you will see as the organization is thinking through, how do we need to change? How do we need to change ourselves in the lens of the veteran? How do we need to change ourselves in the lens of our stakeholders and shareholders? How do we need to communicate better? How do we need to communicate different? And we try very, very hard to do that. I mean, I meet with the VSOs, same reason. They're a constituency, they're a representative of the constituency. How do I make them aware of what we're doing? We sat down with them and we briefed them about the scheduling acquisition. We walked them through what the key components were, because we wanted their feedback. And they actually identified a couple of places where we needed to sharpen our pencils, and we did. So we are looking for that type of input, that type of engagement, to make sure we're doing what's right.
Another reporter asked Warren about how VA is using agile development for software projects.
6 months is the standard. The team is now averaging 4.2 months. VBMS is running every 90 days. We have some web projects that are delivering in less than that. One of the things that we look at is it gets dangerous when you set a date without understanding what's the minimum viable product. And that's a term that's being used. And so based upon what it is that's happening, if it's a change to a website, we should be getting into almost a continuous change. And so how do you get the team to think about that? We may move down from 6 months, but we're using it as a firewall for us. And the fact that we're averaging 4.2 months is the team is understanding that they can do it faster. Our education with the team now is, how do you define a minimally viable product? How do you define what is that bucket? Stop doing it on time, use time as a limiter, but then start figuring out what is something that you can put out and use. And in some cases, it's 6 months. In most cases, it should be less. And so we're trying to make sure there are some arbitrary lines you draw, but we need to make sure the work that needs to be done has got to inform the time. And we're doing quite well against industry standards in terms of where folks are. I think we're doing really well against some of my peers in the federal government in terms of how we do. All of our stuff comes in under 6 months. And in fact, there's a recent GAO report where they were measuring across the federal government who was doing agile, and the VA was the only department where six of the six criteria, we met it in terms of how do you do agile, why do you do agile, what are some of the things you have to have in place for it. So 6 months, but again, based upon what they need to do, we're going to tailor it based upon what it needs versus coming up with a different date.
That's all the time we have for today. You've been listening to excerpts from a press conference by Steph Warren, the Veterans Affairs Department's Chief Information Officer. I'm Jason Miller. Tune in next week for Ask the CIO on Thursday morning at 9 on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.